We're going to head to the north now, to a tropical backyard in suburban Darwin, where producer Rosa Ellen is heading down the rabbit hole into the colourful studio of artist Frank Goya. Frank is a celebrated printmaker and pop artist. His artworks are held by the likes of the MCA, and as Rosa finds out, his studio is a tropical cabinet of curiosities.
My name's Frank Goya. I'm a visual artist from Darwin, Northern Territory. On the wall there, it's...
Frank's studio is cavernous. There are printing presses, artworks, a mezzanine in the middle with a staircase leading up to it, and it's really crammed with objects, toys, art books. Honestly, it's the kind of place you'd like to just have the chance to play around with things.
We're standing in front of a cabinet full of, well, they're toys.
Well, that's right, they're squeaker toys from the 1930s, some of them right up to the 1970s. I grew up sort of, you know, with high school and going to art school as well too, looking at classical paintings and all those kind of forms, whilst these rubber toys are sort of kitsch and elongated and sort of distorted in a way to be appealing for children. They also have their own interesting and intrinsic aesthetics and qualities and forms.
A lot of them have sort of like big doe eyes, and there's sort of expressions that they were obviously of their time, but now they seem sort of stupid and somewhat creepy.
It's definitely creepy. Yeah.
Do you thrive off that unintentional meaning behind pop culture and toy culture?
Absolutely, and every sort of generation has its own figurines and sort of like kitsch that people are into as well too, but it keeps evolving from one form to another as well too. These are elements of its manifestation back in the day, and now it's something else.
You've got all these elements from a different time and of a different era, but now you've also got a music collection here, a lot of CDs and boxes. What sort of music do you listen to while you're working?
It depends whether I'm being contemplative or not. So like I just did a residency in Japan, in Kobe, a couple of months ago, and I brought back heaps of Blue Note Jazz records. They're really good for, like, you know, in the evening, you know, just with a glass of single malt or something like that, just doing a couple of drawings. But if I'm screen printing and I need the physicality to sort of like something to egg me on, I'll just listen to something like Black Sabbath or Dead Kennedys or something like that, The Clash, something that really sort of gets me pumping a bit.
Generals gathered in their masses, just like witches at black masses.
Let's move over to the screen printing part of the workshop. Screen printing is one of your main mediums, and you've got a lot of quite well-known screen prints about Darwin and about its sort of urban mythology and its tall tales. One of those prints is the Poinciana Woman, which is kind of designed as a sort of B-grade film poster. Can you tell me a little bit about who she is?
The Poinciana Woman is a mythological story, I guess, like a part of the Darwin mythos, where apparently she is a woman who was raped around about the time of World War II, and there's all different stories about that, but apparently she haunts East Point Army Reserve here in Darwin, and she particularly doesn't like young men. And so when we were young bogans and hoons, and we'd sort of tear around there in our Minaras and Taranas and E.K. Holdens, we were always wary to not be, you know, not stay there alone, you know, because then she might get you. So, yeah, and it's one of those myths that has endured since those days, which I find really, really cool.
You've also taken a swipe at various Northern Territory governments over the years. Do you sort of feel that there's a bit of a cowboy culture here that is just ripe for sending up?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Darwin is still, I mean, it's called a city, but I still think it's a big country town, and it's definitely full of cowboys and last outpost sort of characters. We have come a long way, and we are evolving all the time, and I really like the changes that are happening in Darwin, actually. But yeah, there's still that element, of course, you know, there'll be a while before that gets knocked out of here.
Police walk in for Jimmy Jazz. I said he ain't here.
My father was French and my mum's Portuguese, but she grew up all of her life in France, and I was born in Brittany in France.
Why did they come to Australia?
For ideological reasons. My mother was pregnant with me during the Paris riots in May of 1968, and my father was working at a hospital. He was also heavily involved with the unions, and they thought that things were going to change in the country, and after a couple of more years they just realised that it was just going to stay, you know, extremely conservative for a long time. And so they'd heard about Gough Whitlam, and they wanted to come to a country that was a lot more progressive at the time, and so they decided to emigrate to Australia.
Wow, so they were like pro-goth emigres.
Yeah, they're just, you know, just your cliche lefties.
But how did they end up in the top end?
When my parents moved to Sydney, they realised that their qualifications, their tertiary qualifications, weren't going to be recognised, and so they had sort of odd jobs here and there and fairly menial jobs. Like my father was got to live out his socialist ideals by working in a factory making caravan parts, ironically. I guess they had like a romanticised cliche view of what Australia might look like, and Sydney wasn't that for them. And they wanted to see some of what they described as the real Australia, and they wanted to go on an adventure. And so when Cyclone Tracy hit, they decided to come up here and seek a new future and see what opportunities were up here, and they started their demolition business.
Frank's parents' demolition business gave him an early love of trash and treasure. As you heard, it still influences him, and he uses the things he finds in his paintings and collage work. It sounds as if he's never not collecting.
I have a lot of cabinets of curiosity, which is a Victorian thing that I really like as well too, where I've got various bits and pieces. We're standing in front of a type cabinet which holds movable lead type from about 1850, 1860. I'll just open one of the drawers. And you'll see in there this all movable lead type of a particular font, particular point size, because I also have an extensive collection of letterpress equipment in here as well too.
You've got monkey skulls and little dolls and Merv Hughes standing on top of a VB toy. What makes the cabinet? What are the criteria?
As crazy and obtuse as you can possibly get. And like, yeah, there's a Maori doll there from the 1960s. There's a piece of Neolithic jade from China. There's a rocket money bank from the 60s when the space race was happening. There we've got a Masonic apron from the 1800s with a skull and crossbones on it made from felt and silver. I'm constantly looking for that new thing that will sort of take me on to the next project. I spent probably about 15 years of my life working on Indigenous communities as a collaborative printmaker as well too, when I was a lot younger, and got to meet some really, really incredible artists and got to work with them, but also heard their stories about sort of dispossession and massacre and things like that, particularly out in the Kimberleys.
Some of your prints reference Indigenous culture, which is so prevalent in the top end, including there's one that has a local lingo that white Territorians have adopted.
I never saw it as anything different until people started, I guess, like asking me about it like you are now. It's just something that we grew up here as well too. We always grew up with Indigenous kids. Back in the day, there was certain pubs that my parents would go to, and they still had, well, that was called the back bar or the black bar, which is like quite racist and derogatory, but that's the sort of thing that we sort of grew up with. And my parents, because they couldn't speak English very well, they probably felt a lot more comfortable drinking at the back bar. And as a consequence, our lives were so far richer for adventure and for learning about other people's cultures and stories, because we got to hang out with a mob out there and got invited out to Daly River and all sorts of places, camping and hunting and fishing when we were kids. And so, I mean, I guess I'm just an honorary black fella, really. I mean, and a lot of kids grew up like that here in Darwin, and with Asian kids as well too. So it's really great. I just think we're really lucky to have the culture that we do have in Darwin.
That's Darwin artist Frank Goyer. He's currently in an exhibition at the Frank Schlag Galerie in Essen in Germany. This is The Art Show. I'm Namila Benson.